And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodrick's here. It's our second hour on Thursday. And this is Open Phones Thursday, 410-662-8780. I'm inviting your calls from our listeners to get off your chest or off your mind, anything that's on your mind or on your chest. 866-661-9309 is a toll-free number. You can call, use that number from anywhere in the country. But locally here in Maryland, in our metro area, 410-662-8780. The Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. I have some emails to read, also to catch up on email from previous shows, especially this week. We had a couple of shows that got a lot of comment, to say the least. And one was on religion and atheism the other day, raising children in an atheist household. And yesterday's show on the early Mormon church, the founding of the Mormon church by Joseph Smith. Lots of comments on that, too, that I'll share with you. Some news stories I'm throwing out there for comment. We haven't heard, haven't had a chance on Midday to talk about the story that's developed since the weekend, and that is the release of Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl, which has now become controversial. Bergdahl, just to recap, was captured in Afghanistan, I believe it was June of 2009, after walking away from his base unarmed. Some of his former comrades have accused Sergeant Bergdahl of desertion and complained that some U.S. soldiers, maybe six, perhaps up to eight, died in the search for him. The military, the Defense Department, has not confirmed any link between Bergdahl's disappearance and those deaths. Nonetheless, there are several stories in the press about this this week. The New York Times yesterday had a story saying that the connection between Bergdahl's disappearance in June 30th, 2009, and lives being lost in the search for him, the facts about that remain murky at the for the time being. Meanwhile, the hometown of Sergeant Bergdahl up in Idaho, Haley, Idaho, a town of 8,000 people that's every year since his disappearance or his capture by the Taliban 5 years ago, has held an annual Bring Bo Back rally to raise awareness, keep people focused on his capture, show support for his family. They canceled a celebration that was planned after his release. That's I guess they got a lot of phone calls up there, bombarded, actually, city officials in Haley, Idaho, say, with angry phone calls and emails. So they've called off the celebration. But officially, the town or the city of Haley, I guess you can be a city of 8,000, I guess, said that Reuters is referring to it as a city here. The officials up there say that their June 28th event for Sergeant Bergdahl was canceled in the interest of public safety, because they're expecting a horde of media and protesters and just a lot more attention than they ever expected to have. So there's that story. There's the GM story today. General Motors CEO Mary Barra saying this morning that she's fired 15 people who were either incompetent or irresponsible in their actions involving those ignition switches, the fatally flawed ignition switches, I guess you could say, linked to, what was the number, 13, is 12 or 13 deaths where airbags failed to inflate. It's all connected. Quite a scandal at GM, but heads rolling there. If you have comments about that, I wonder if that's going to affect sales of General Motors in any way, the way they handle this. First of all, the flaw, and then secondly, their handling of it. And can the CEO bring things back by making this kind of decision today, firing 15 people? I've heard a couple people who are in the markets for automobiles or trucks said that they were given pause by this and not sure that they would like to buy a GM product, not sure they would right now. I wonder if you have any thoughts about that. The City Council of Baltimore has moved ahead with, and the mayor says she will sign a new provision making a stricter curfew for youths in Baltimore City. Under the new curfew, children 14 years old or younger must be indoors year-round by 9 p.m. Year-round, that includes summer vacation. Children 14 through 16 will be able to stay out until 10 o'clock on school nights and 11 o'clock on the weekends and over the summer. Currently, all children and teens younger than 17 can stay out until 11 on weeknights and until midnight on the weekends. So a stricter curfew, especially for those 14 and younger. What do you think about that? There was, it sounds like something that would be widely supported, but actually ran into some opposition on its way to a final vote in the city council. The mayor says, Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake says she'll sign that into law. Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? What do you, have you had a chance to think about it? What do you think? Is that a good thing for the city, having this stricter curfew for kids? 410-662-8780. Open phones here on Midday. We don't do this very much, but usually when we do, we get lots of comments. Folks have things that they've been wanting to say for a few days, following up on earlier shows or earlier topics that we covered. If you didn't get a chance to get on online with us, this is an opportunity to do that. 410-662-8780. Our Midday email address, midday@wypr.org. And I guess this is good news. How can you say, you know, a falling property tax rate in Baltimore City is not good news? It's just that it's not that much, but it's something, right? So the Board of Estimates, I guess they have now approved without discussion, according to Yvonne Wenger's story in The Sun today, a further drop in the city property tax rate. Baltimore City has the highest property tax rate in the state. It's twice what it is in the surrounding counties of Baltimore. But the Board of Estimates agreed yesterday to lower the rate to $2.13 per $100 of assessed value. That's still double what goes on in the surrounding counties. But it is down 14 cents in the past couple of years, and the mayor has a plan to knock 20 cents off the tax rate for homeowners by 2020. So there's something there. I don't know if anybody's getting too excited about it. Let's see. The Sun had a Yvonne's story had a breakdown here. It said, let's see, the property tax bill for an average home in Baltimore will go down $174. So we could talk about what would you do with $174 during this hour midday. The bill for a $145,000 house will drop from $3,269 to $3,095 in the fiscal year that begins July 1st. So, I don't know. What do you just dismiss something like that as symbolic, or do you say, hey, the mayor's trying, considering the circumstances, at least there's an effort being made there? We'd like to hear from you. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. A couple announcements I wanted to make. One is, we've mentioned this before, but now we've finally firmed up the plans and confirmed all the candidates who will be with us the week of June 26th on Midday. That's ahead of the June 24th Maryland primary. We're going to devote an entire week, 10 hours of public radio, to the candidates for governor and attorney general, and we're going to cover some of the legislative districts and some of the county executive races in Maryland. So that begins the week of June 16th. Each gubernatorial candidate, three Democrats, the four Republicans, each of them are going to have an hour to answer my questions and yours here on Midday during that week. And we'll also devote an hour to the three Democratic candidates for attorney general. And as I say, we'll also take a look at some of the most interesting and hotly contested legislative district races around the state and some county executive races. So that's the week of June 16th. That's just a week ahead of the primary. Let's go to the phone lines. 410-662-8780 for open phones here on Midday. Teresa had a comment about the curfew that the city council approved and the mayor says she'll sign. Teresa, how you doing?
I'm fine, but I'm very concerned about what's going to happen in the sweltering heat this summer when children have to go inside the house by 9 o'clock. Mm-hmm. You know, for decades, people have been out on the stoop and around the neighborhood because of the heat. They can't, it's just too hot in those houses. That's one of the concerns. And the other, all this money, whatever money we have, needs to be put into recreation and pools for the children and jobs so that they have something to do, so they'll be tired and want to go home at 9 o'clock.
Well, okay, so let me just repeat that under the curfew, children 14 and under have to be indoors by 9 o'clock year-round. Children 14 through 16 can stay out till 10 on school nights and 11 on weekends and over the summer. So the older kids can stay out till at least 11. So, I mean, you think that in the summer it's not logical or unreasonable to expect kids 14 and under to be indoors by 9?
Well, I mean, I just think that it's very strict because it's so hot and people are out until 10 or 11 because when it's sweltering in Baltimore, it's, you know, going inside the house doesn't seem an option, you know. I don't know that everyone has air conditioning full throttle.
Well, and it does make me wonder how it's going to be enforced, too. So, I mean, what do you make of this then, Teresa? Do you just see it as a symbolic thing the city council did to make it look like they're doing something to curb juvenile crime or juvenile delinquency or what? What do you think?
I'm puzzled because we just, for years and years, we just haven't really taken hold of the fact that we need jobs for our children in the summer, the teens, and we need recreation. We don't have what we need. We don't have the pools we need. We don't have the recreation centers that we desperately need for these children.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your comments. Others are welcome here on Midday. 410-662-8780 is our number. Do you think that's a good idea to have this stricter curfew in Baltimore City? You think it can be enforced in Baltimore City? I'd like to hear from you on that. And then the Bo Bergdahl story here. I know a lot of folks have been talking about it, making comments about this. The final word on what exactly happened with Bo Bergdahl is not in yet. The facts are murky, to use the word from the headline of the New York Times. We can go over some of that. If you want to talk about it, give me a ring. 866-661-9309 is a toll-free number. Or whatever's on your mind on this lovely day. I don't know. Is it a lovely day? I haven't been outside for a while. So you could give me the weather report, too, when you call in. A short break here on Midday. When we get back, I got some emails to read and to follow up on earlier shows, and we'll take some calls. Once again, our phone number is 410-662-8780. Tomorrow on Midday, this is the first hour, right? Yeah, tomorrow's first hour, a noon hour of Midday Friday, a conversation with a Johns Hopkins researcher. This is really interesting. Carl Alexander has basically devoted his entire career to studying some of the poorest children in Baltimore and their families. He spent nearly 25 years examining the lives of 800 children, following them from first grade through adulthood to learn, you know, what makes the difference in their lives? What's the difference between success and failure in the lives of these children? So tomorrow we're going to learn about what he learned about them and their families and what made the difference. He's put all his research into a book called The Long Shadow, Family Background, Disadvantaged Urban Youth, and the Transition to Adulthood, based on a 25-year study of a 800 city school student cohort over a quarter century. So Carl Alexander will be joining us on the show in the first hour tomorrow. I look forward to that conversation and hearing what he learned about these kids. And in the second hour of the show, tomorrow, Friday, is Midday Eats with Hong and Shields. Henry Hong and John Shields will be here. And it's all about the egg tomorrow, right? Because Michael Ruhlman is on with us. He's got a cookbook that's all about the egg, the magnificent orb. We'll be talking about that in the second hour of our show tomorrow. And by the way, we've offered here, can I mention this on the air? I guess I should. We've offered a dinner for 10 prepared by me, Henry Hong, and John Shields in your home for you and 9 family members or guests. A really nice meal. It'll be a memorable evening. And that is the prize in a contest that you could be entered into to win that prize for a donation to WYPR, a membership pledge during this month of June. And that you can find out more information about that at WYPR.org. So anyway, so that would be the bonus. If you make a donation, your name gets entered into a drawing, and Henry and John and I will come to your house and make a 5-course meal for your you and 9 others. What do you think of that, huh? Huh? You don't have to provide anything except the guests. 410-662-8780. Let's go back to the phone line. Sarah is giving us a ring now. It's open phones here. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
So what do you think of the curfew?
I think it's long overdue. I lived in Canton for 5 years and recently moved out. One of the reasons being because the amount of crime that was starting to happen in the area by juveniles.
What kind of crime? Tell us what happened down there when you were living in Canton.
Well, there were a couple instances where grown women were being attacked in the morning by juveniles, broad daylight. In my own home, there was an attempted break-in, and the police, you know, have been really active, which I really appreciate. They've been really active in the area with us, because there's been so many instances of break-ins caused by juveniles, and, you know, it escalated recently for that woman who was lived over in Patterson Park.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed.
Yes.
In our home.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where I was so paranoid about walking anywhere by myself.
Now, what about at night? You said broad daylight when you were describing one of those incidents. What about at night? You see kids on the street after 9, 10 o'clock, even 11 o'clock on school nights?
Yes.
So you think most of the problems are associated with juveniles, teenagers?
Yes. And the police, Baltimore police, also came and met with the community. And same thing.
Yeah. And so I'm curious, what happened to where did you move to?
I moved out to Baltimore County. Just, you know, we don't have the same issues out there that we had in Canton, and I feel that the Baltimore police can only do so much because until I think, you know, those kids, unless you're a violent crime offender, you're not going to jail. And those kids understand that and utilize that because there's a lack of law involved. We met with Bernstein at a community meeting, and he gave no indication that he would look into possibly changing the law. You know, I don't know. You know, I guess a lot of the residents in the area are kind of like, we don't know what to do because you don't feel safe in your own area. You know, I actually am still in the Facebook community in Canton, and someone just a couple of days ago, her life was threatened by some kids that were on bikes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were acting disrespectful, and she approached them, and they threatened her life.
What time of day, do you know, happen to know what time of day that was? Was that?
It was during the daytime hours. Yeah. I'm not sure what time.
Yeah, because that kind of behavior goes on all the time. I hear people complain about that a lot during the middle of the day on the weekends. So, okay. Well, I'm sorry you moved out of the city, Sarah. I'm curious, how old are you?
I'm 34.
Would you consider moving back?
Not until the city. I think, well, it's expensive to live in the city. And until they improve the schools and they get crime rates down, I wouldn't consider it.
Right. So you tried it for a while. And how long did you live in the city?
I lived in the city for almost 10 years.
Hmm.
And I there are things that I like about the city. There are things that are great about it. You know, that you can walk places and there's a lot of different cultural pockets in the city and there's great restaurants. And I just think that when you get to the point where you're going to have kids,
I'll
let people move out. You know, it's great in your 20s. And then you know, when you start looking at having a family, you move out.
That's a classic story. That's a story I've heard from people for 3-4 decades now. Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the call. Jan in Gwin Oak. Jan, how you doing?
I called because you were talking about property values, and I got my property assessment for this fiscal year. My property value has tripled.
Well, that's a good thing, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Well, your assessment went up? Oh, you don't think it's...
No, it's totally bogus. They did it to the whole neighborhood, and I'm looking at these. These homes are assessed at $175,000 to $220,000, and they're selling at $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. They're not worth that. There's foreclosures all over the place.
Okay, slow down. Let's go over this a little bit, Jan. Are you you're in Gwin Oak?
Garwin Oaks.
Where is Garwin Oaks?
It's north of Gwynns Falls Parkway between Garrison Boulevard and Chelsea Terrace.
Okay. So
they're old homes, over 100 years old. They're great big old homes, big porches.
Okay. And you say, let me go over this with you. You say your property assessments, because we were talking about property tax rate.
Your assessments rate is on your assessment.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So you're saying your assessment tripled from what to what?
$60,000 to $177,000.
Okay, and the $60,000, that was from the last assessment.
That was the last time I went in with dozens and dozens of proofs of what the city assessed them at,
mm-hmm.
and what they sold at recently. And the assessment was always like $181,000, but it just sold for $60,000.
Well, that seems way off, because usually
incredibly way
it's
off.
It's way off. So, what do you, have you contested this again?
Again, I did it in 2008. I did it in 2011. I'm doing it again now.
Okay. Well, they put you through that. You have to do that. I'm curious. Last time you appealed, what did they say in response to your appeal?
Actually, the woman walked out on me.
What do you mean she walked out on you?
She left for lunch. She just left for lunch. I said, let me speak to her supervisor. Her supervisor said, I'll assess it. What do you want your assessment to be? Don't complain about her, okay? I said, no, I want you to look at the proofs that I have. I did my homework. I have the proofs right here.
All right.
So he gave me an appointment. He looked at it. He said, yes, you're right. It's only worth that much. But now the woman who walked out on me just tripled it again.
I haven't heard about assessments being so far off. And I'm sorry, I don't know where Garwin Oaks is, so I'm glad you explained that. But, Jan, can you stay on the line? I want to talk to you off the air about this.
Okay, you can take all my proofs and start looking into stuff.
Yeah, I'm curious about it. I have one other question before you go, though, for our listeners who might be listening with me. Did anyone else from your neighborhood complain about their assessments?
I don't know.
Well,
but if you can't pay the tax on it, they just toss you out of your home and auction it off.
That's correct. But I wonder if other people got similar assessments that you say are exaggerated. So, but listen, give your phone number, Jan, to my our intern Brian, who's with us today. Okay.
Okay.
And then I'll call you off the air about that. I should follow up. Kurt in Baltimore, we'll go to you next. Thanks for calling Midday. This is Open Phone Lines. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, Dad.
What's going on?
This really builds on your last call, because the whether the curfew works or not, the old curfew was never enforced, and that's one of the things that even the newspaper articles talk about. It wasn't enforced. The new one, we don't have the manpower to do it. So it's a worthless gesture. This tax reduction in the rate, as your last caller just said, we're seeing property values go up. That's all going to be eaten up in the increased value of your homes. It's a worthless gesture. This walkabout that
Kurt, hold on, slow down. Wait a minute. Kurt, on the assessment business there, depending on where you are, where you live, and if it's for real, your property value going up is a good thing. Your taxes would be even higher if they didn't knock off this little bit. That's all I'll say about it, just to be fair.
But in the city, with the values going up overall between 6 and 8% in the past year, you're not going to see a property tax reduction in the sense that less money is coming in. This is a worthless gesture.
Well,
it is a worthless gesture so that she can put on her reelection campaign committees commercials that she lowered taxes.
Okay, you're complaining about property values going up?
No, all I'm saying is that this is an effort by the mayor simply to do worthless gestures that will try and make her record look better, but have very little effect on the people who actually live in Baltimore and who complain about higher taxes.
Okay.
It's not going to change the ratio between what Baltimoreans pay and what people in the counties pay. It's simply going to be something she can put and say, yes, I reduced it by this pittance, but you paid more because your values have been going up.
Okay.
And anybody who walks around the Inner Harbor surrounded by the police commissioner and five officers and three reporters is not going to experience crime. So the idea that somehow is a message that the streets are safer is just ridiculous. This is nothing but window dressing, and it's really not going to have any effect on the people who live in the city or why people are leaving the city. And it's a real shame. We need to have a city government that takes the needs of the city carefully and considers real measures that will have real change, and not this window dressing.
Okay, well, what would those be then, Kurt? I don't want to just leave it at that. I'm going to press you a little bit. So what would real changes, if you were the mayor, if you were the president of the city council, what would you be pushing for?
There have been several proposals in the last couple of years. Carl Stokes had one. Jody Landers had one that would actually reduce property taxes significantly. It would require a little bit of sacrifice. Mm-hmm. You might not be able to say that everything is going the way that you want it to for the first year or so. People would have to learn how to do with less. as far as city service is concerned, but it would actually make a significant change in the way that the city looks, because you would be penalizing these people who are holding on to hulks or old commercial properties that are doing nothing for the neighborhoods because their property taxes are artificially low. There were several real meaty proposals that were put forth in the last couple of years that the current mayor just completely ignored or dismissed.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I remember, Jody's proposal in particular, and others who said, just say you're going to cut the property tax in half. You're going to do it within 5 or 6 years and meet that goal and adjust, make the adjustments necessary in the time between. And the idea was that if you made that announcement, you said you were going to cut the property tax in half within maybe 10 years it was, or 7 years, that you would spur some investment, more interest in people buying property in the city, and maybe offset the loss in revenue in part. So anyway, I'm with you on that, Kurt. Thank you for your call with your frustrations. Thank you for expressing them. We'll go to Charlotte in Baltimore next and say hello to her. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, I'm here. I wanted to reinforce what the first caller said at the top of the hour regarding the youth and the heat in the city in the summer. If it were enforced, that curfew law would just be absolutely cruel. And the other thing is that it's unrealistic to think of 12 and 13-year-olds coming in at 9 o'clock at night. That's just...
Yeah, in the summertime. I mean, the sun is barely going down. At that time, yeah. I have my doubts about whether Commissioner Batts and the police department can enforce this law.
I think it's just there in case somebody doesn't like what children are doing.
Yeah.
And then, they can call the police and police can come get them and say you've broached the curfew.
Charlotte, thank you. Thanks for your comments. Open phone lines here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Will in Baltimore. Will is 14 years old, our youngest caller today so far. Will, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Let me think. What time is it? It's 1:35 p.m. Thursday. And Will, you're 14, and aren't you supposed to be in school?
Well, I'm in exams right now, so we have half days.
Oh, you had an exam this morning, and you came home, and you were listening to Mr. Dan on the radio.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what did you want to say about this curfew?
I wanted to build off the first caller and the last caller and say that it's kind of impossible to enforce a curfew that like that on that age group, on this age group.
Mm-hmm. The 9 o'clock deal, year-round, indoors by 9 o'clock, you think that's unrealistic?
Right. I mean... the sun isn't even going to be down by then.
Yeah. So so why do you think they did this in the city council? Just to say they did?
Sort of, but also I can understand the crime and juvenile delinquency, but you can't enforce that. It's kind of hard to tell someone my age that they can't be outside by 11 after 11 when that's sort of, I don't know, it's really hard to do that.
Yeah. Thank you, Will. Appreciate your comments and good luck with the rest of your exams.
Thank you.
Okay. The new law will extend the daytime curfew hours from 7:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. The daytime rules will restrict those under 16 from being in public places or stores during the hours when they should be in school. Quoting here again from Yvonne Wenger's story in the Baltimore Sun. Also, the mayor's quotes on this. I am not willing to gamble on the lives of our children, she said. Let me be clear, this is not a criminal enforcement act by the police. Children will not be entered into the criminal justice system for merely violating curfew. This is about taking them out of harm's way. The mayor said she will sign the bill that went through the city council. And as she said, the measure will keep the city's children and teens safe and identify families in need of intervention. Back to the phone lines on another subject. Mickey in Baltimore on the subject of Sergeant Bergdahl. I'm glad you called. Mickey, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you today?
Okay. What are your thoughts on this so far, this story?
Okay. I've been following this in peripheral ways. I was out of the country when a lot of this came down, but I would have to say I'm alarmed at the lack of humanity in the people who are showing concern about bringing back to the States a prisoner of war. It just seems logical that if this gentleman has disobeyed laws, if he's accusations against him, let's try him in a court of law or military court, however appropriate. Don't just abandon him to the enemy.
Right. I mean, there's been a rush to judgment here, but in part, it's because since this story came out just over the weekend, I mean, this is last weekend's. This was a prisoner exchange, in which Afghan insurgents turned Sergeant Bergdahl over. I mean, it's 5 years. He was in captivity for 5 years. But mm-hmm. a number of the men who served with him are saying he was a deserter. So that's become kind of the media narrative now. We don't actually have proof of that yet. And some of these veterans have gone even further to blame him for the deaths of 6 to 8 soldiers. So that's become part of the media narrative. But as you say, we don't know the whole truth yet.
It's terribly disturbing on many levels. It is the case that apparently these negotiations also have been going on for quite some time, and apparently there were other elements of the negotiations that fell through. Perhaps we didn't get as much as we were bargaining for. But we did get this gentleman back, and I think that lives should be saved when they can be. If this gentleman was, I'm not sure how he's responsible for the lives of the folks who went after him, but it could be that, you know, there's a lot of gray areas in this.
Mickey, let me ask you about this part of it, though. The second part of this story is the criticism over President Obama's decision to release 5 Taliban detainees from Gitmo, from Guantanamo. These were considered pretty high-level Taliban detainees in exchange for Bergdahl. So what do you think about that we haven't touched on?
I hear you, but, you know, basically we're all familiar with situations where Israeli combatants, Israeli soldiers have been released. One fellow has been released for 20 of the opposition. And I'm not saying that, you know, one life is worth more than another, but I would have to say that certainly we should do whatever we can as a nation to preserve American lives under every circumstance.
All right, Mickey.
You know, we should not leave this gentleman's fate to the, indiscretions of the enemy. That to me, you know, we are against, in this country, we're against improper imprisonment. We're against improper punishment. You know, we want to make sure that the punishment is in relationship to the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And when we leave one of ours with them, we, you know, that goes out the window. And I'm very disappointed with Dutch Ruppersberger for the position that he took the other day on this. I'm really, really rather alarmed that folks are jumping on this bandwagon in this way.
Mickey, thank you for your comments. They're appreciated, as will be others. 410-662-8780. We need to take just a short break. We'll come back. I got some more phone calls to take, some emails to read. So let's do that. Short break on Midday. Here's an email from Julie in Canton following up on an earlier conversation about crime in Canton, moving out of the city. Julie says, some of us families, actually a lot of us have families and are staying in the city and want the city life for our children, which includes countless museums, green spaces, great restaurants, and a host of other kid-friendly activities. You only have to go to a Locust Point Little League game to see the number of families staying in the city. Speaking of families in the city, you got an email here from Mark, who wrote in following a show we did just before the Preakness. By the way, the Belmont is Saturday, you know. California Chrome going for that triple crown. On our Preakness show a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about getting kids out to the track, get them to enjoy actually seeing horses in the flesh racing. Mark says, inspired by your show, we took the kids to Pimlico and had a blast. I've listened over the years when you've encouraged us all to spend a day at the track, but I was skeptical. I even called in a few years back, pre-slots, saying the horse people had hitched their wagon to the dirty casino business. But when A Day at the Races was offered as a fundraiser for St. Agnes Hospital, we bought it. So this Sunday, three dads, seven kids ages 3 to 9, headed for Pimlico to meet up with my old friend Ross Petticord, veteran of Maryland's horse industry. He used to be a racing writer at the Evening Sun way back. And Ross showed us around the track and took us back to the stables where the kids fed the horses. The kids picked horses and watched the races from right along the fence. It's called the rail. The dads had Bloody Marys and placed $2 bets. It was a great way to spend a sunny afternoon. We'll be back next year. Thanks for the perpetual optimism and highlighting the great and underappreciated things about our city. That's from Mark. Thank you very much. Midday's email address, midday@wypr.org. Angela in Catonsville, back on the subject of taxes and property values. Angela, thanks for calling.
Hello. I was originally from Baltimore City, and I moved out in the county almost 17 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in a city during a time where every block that you went to in the city, you could go to a recreation center. That's one of the areas that's totally lacking in the city, that the youth have nowhere to go. In addition to that, one of the reasons why I moved out into the county was for better schools, in order for my kids to be isolated from the crime, because during that time when my kids were born, I was on Reichstown Road. So you saw prostitution all up and down the street, and nothing was done about it. And that was late at night because I was working second shift back then.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever steps they're taking now regarding curfews, rather than looking at curfews, they need to look at other avenues to give these kids something to do. They're out on the street for a reason, and the reason is because they have nowhere to go.
You know, Angela, Molly McGrath Tierney was the city's social services director, and she's since left that position. She talked about what the mayor is referring to here as intervention, a way to keep kids out of foster care, number one. It was to intervene when they suspected a problem with a family. The mayor is saying here that having the curfew is a way to trace a potential problem in a family, that a family's having trouble keeping kids busy, occupied indoors, out of trouble. So I would only say, as far as the mayor's comment about intervention, families in need of intervention, as this being a way to identify them, then you got to follow up and do something, right?
Well, I agree with what you're saying, but even then, like I said, I grew up in a city during the 70s. Every block I went to, there was a recreation center. In those recreation centers, there were directors in those recreation centers. And they were, because they were dealing with us on a daily basis, they saw us every day, they saw our moms, they knew the circumstances regarding the fact that mom's at work, so therefore my kids coming here every day. So they knew the circumstances, and if there was any type of intervention that needed to be done, it was done right there in the mm-hmm. recreation center.
Mm-hmm.
I was taught how to volunteer. I was given a lot of my skills because I was there in that recreation center, and those people actually cared. Right now, because we're so isolated from each other, and people like to categorize everyone, the people that's intervening don't have necessarily that child's best interest at heart, because again, it's a systematic thing that they're doing. And that's my opinion of it regarding that.
Angela, nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling. Beverly in Baltimore with a comment about the curfews. Beverly, you're on Midday. Go right ahead, please.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to say, I think that more efforts need to be put on the parents of these children to be more responsible with the children. And I can picture back to when I was a child, we had a curfew. We had to be in front of our door, but not in the house at a particular time in the day.
Hmm.
And a lot of the crime is going on during the daytime. So if you put a curfew on after a certain time in the evening, what does it do for the crime during the daytime? And I also think why we do have so much crime with our young people is that the parents cannot afford not to be at different jobs till late in the evening, and they don't have the funds to make sure that their children are being supervised by proper people. So some of this big business that consume so much of our time, and we can't spend time with our families and sit down around a dinner table or watch a movie in the house together, is taken away because of big business.
I'm glad you made that point. It's something that people don't consider. That is a big problem. Beverly, thank you for calling. Ben, you're up next on Midday Open Phones here. Ben, go right ahead, please. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Dan?
Good.
I guess I would like to get your opinion as regarding the hostage. I just turned on the radio while there was a lady making comments as to how she felt about somebody else's comment that they made the other day.
You mean Sergeant Bergdahl?
Okay, yes.
Yeah.
So my question to you, or to get your opinion, is do you think, now, after looking at the fact that this was a hostage trade with prisoners of war, now, after looking at that, would you consider this to be a strategic move in order, another step to ending the war in Afghanistan after taking the soldiers out and bringing them back home and sort of releasing some of these prisoners to say we are done? And if something was to arise, it seems like America is showing grace by giving back these prisoners of war, even though they are dangerous to our well-being here in the States and overseas. But the war has to end someday. And I see this as a very strong strategic move by America to say, here it is, we're done for now. And I think if something was to happen again by terrorists, I think America would have the right to go in and do whatever necessary to protect, you know, the interests of America. And
well, Ben, that's one way of looking at it, and you're probably correct in your view about it. There has been this groundswell of criticism of President Obama because of this decision for releasing these Taliban detainees from Guantanamo Bay in exchange for Bergdahl and his release, because people who don't like President Obama have been critical of him, will be critical of him no matter what he does, will see this as negotiating with terrorists instead of being in exchange for a prisoner. There's this other element, though, with the Bergdahl story. You know, was he a deserter or was he actually a prisoner of war captured by the Taliban? We don't know enough to say yet from all my reading of it. A comment on Twitter from Tom says, if Bergdahl deserted to the Taliban, then he has become the enemy and we don't rescue enemies. But again, I mean, this is speculation. I'm sorry. At this point, we don't know for sure what exactly transpired here. The other part of this is Guantanamo. I mean, the Guantanamo detention remains this black mark on America. We haven't been able to do anything there because Congress won't allow the president to do anything there. Even our members of our own Congress here in Maryland, we don't take these prisoners into federal prisons in the United States. We won't let the administration release any of the detainees, or a whole bunch of them, not all of them, but won't release a good number of them to other countries. So the president's hands are still kind of tied by Congress when it comes to Guantanamo. In this case, he found a way to do it. It's in exchange for an American prisoner. But I guess we'll find out more about this. I know that the newspapers have filed Freedom of Information actions to try to get more information about the case from the Defense Department to find out exactly what happened with Bo Bergdahl, Sergeant Bergdahl of the Army. And we'll find out soon. Hank in Hamden, with a comment about back on the subject of taxes and property values in Baltimore.
Hi there. I wanted to say real quickly that I'm 34 and I'm in my house by 9 p.m. by choice. It's so dangerous outside.
Yeah.
But the property taxes, it's a no-brainer. Everyone I know is leaving when they become, I'm 34, when they get to the age where they want to have kids, they get out of here. So I don't know what's going to go, but I think it comes from up top. Mayor Rawlings Blake made a comment about.
All right, Hank, we're losing you here, but I heard what you're saying. When you get to be 34, you're going to raise a family, going to leave the city. At some point here, we got to reverse that trend. There's a big investment, $1 billion-plus investment going into the city schools. I know it's just money for physical improvements of the schools, but hopefully the schools get better. The charter schools, some are struggling, some are doing very well. And maybe, you know, some people, ever since suburban life was established 50, 60, 70 years ago, people have seen that as the place where you go to raise children. And then when you're an empty nester, you come back to the city. It may be that way for a while. It may be when the city grows, it'll be younger people, single people renting in Baltimore, maybe buying houses. I hope they buy houses. They can buy my house. And coming back later to enjoy city life after your kids have grown up. But that middle part that he's talking about, you know, when you hit the years when you want to start a family, raise a family, the city's got to compete there. I got all these emails about our godless hour from the other day, about the atheist hour. I don't know what to do with them. It's like I need time to read these, and I guess I should just – can I just save them for another day? Do I have enough – can I just save these? We should post these or something. There was a comment from Doug regarding yesterday's show on Joseph Smith and the founding of the Mormon Church. He said most religious adherents are more multi-layered than the caricatures painted by casual observers. Is there a reason that your broadcasts, plural, on Mormonism never include Mormons? There are some erudite, respected voices in the Latter-day Saints community that might add helpful nuance to your discussions. Well, Doug, I'm sorry, but I don't remember doing a show on Mormons. Yesterday's show was the first time we took on Joseph Smith and the Golden Plates and the founding of the Mormon Church. And we took it on with a non-Mormon who spent 4 or 5 years researching, with the help of the Mormon Church, the founding of the Mormon Church and Joseph Smith's early life. So that's a biographer, an author. Should we have Mormon voices on more to talk about the Mormon Church? I'll pursue that if you want another day. But as far as yesterday's show go, it was to me another author interview based on a work of history. Mary Jane, quickly, we're almost out of time on open phones, Mary Jane, but I'd like to hear from you. Go right ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. In regard to this Bob Bergman, however you pronounce his name.
Bergdahl, Bo Bergdahl.
Bo Bergdahl. Yeah, I'm a service child. I'm 64 years old, so I've been living my life by service guidelines since I was born. And what I'm not hearing or seeing is the privacy of a person who is a service person. No matter what he did, I'm not seeing that. And even if this man, perhaps in some people's eyes, was a traitor, and walked away, maybe his caliber of personhood, he shouldn't have been put in the service.
Okay. We'll pursue that. Mary Jane, I'm sorry, we ran out of time, but we'll pick that up another day, because this story needs to be resolved. There's more to come on the Bo Bergdahl story, and we'll find out more about him and his personality, I'm sure, in the coming days and weeks. Thank you very much for tuning in today for our midday show. We'll be back again tomorrow. I appreciate folks calling in to share their thoughts about these issues. Dan Roderick's here for our staff. We'll see you again tomorrow.